We've spent trillions and trillions of dollars overseas while our infrastructure at home has so badly crumbled. I will be asking Congress to approve legislation that produces a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure of the United States, financed through both public and private capital, creating millions of new jobs.
French Republican candidate François Fillon is set to make a speech after postponing his visit to the Paris Farm Show. A report by Mediapart suggests his wife's in custody.
He had said that he would give up if he was charged. At the moment, he is not charged. He's just heard by the judges. But of course, a lot of concerns can be found from this, the fact that his wife is being held in custody at the moment.
10-year absence, and it's back in the game, is it, in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, big time, actually, for Citigroup, who exited Saudi Arabia in 2004 by giving up a banking license there. So this move is quite a big initiative from their side to try and get back to the kingdom at the time when there are major reforms happening and big initiatives like potential IPO of Saudi Aramco to massive privatizations, mega bond issuances. So we've seen it all in Saudi Arabia, and I think Citigroup realizes that this is probably the best time to be in there.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's March 1st, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Lots to cover today. In just a few minutes, we'll talk about artificial intelligence and robots. Are they going to take our jobs? And if they do, how will we make money? Later in the broadcast, we will also update a story that we had on earlier this week about prescriptions, deadly prescriptions, and vaccines. That's coming later in the program. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, global stocks generally are higher, mixed in some places, as investors are focusing less on last night's speech by President Trump, his first speech to Congress, and more on what the Federal Reserve governors yesterday, policymakers, were talking about. A growing chance of a U.S. interest rate hike in March. I've got to remind myself it is already March, so this month. Mr. Trump took a measured tone in his keenly awaited speech, saying he was open to immigration reform, failing again to provide much detail on his plans for tax reform and infrastructure spending. That could actually rattle the markets further today because Wall Street investors were waiting to see details of what he might say. A handful of those Federal Reserve policymakers yesterday jolted the markets into higher expectations for the March U.S. interest rates, comments that suggested rate setters are worried about waiting too long in the face of pending economic stimulus in Washington. Dow futures are higher this morning as we coast to the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. Dow futures up 88 right now. NASDAQ and S&P futures higher as well. Crude oil is trading at $54.23 a barrel, up almost a third. In Europe, the markets are all higher. The FTSE, the DAX, the CAC, the FTSE leading the way up about 65 points, almost a percent. The DAX not far behind, 1.5%. Asian markets are generally higher as well, with the Nikkei ending up almost 1.5% at 274 points higher on the day. Yesterday, we had a really interesting story about something called coin software, contract intelligence, something the J.P. Morgan Chase & Company is using, a learning machine that is going through financial deals and contracts, something that consumed about 360,000 hours of work each year by lawyers and loan officers. The software reviews those documents in just seconds. Just the latest in an example of artificial intelligence. Lots of concern about, will this eventually take American jobs, world jobs, global jobs? We thought we would bring in Edward Hess on this today, a professor of business administration and a Batten executive in residence, the University of Virginia Darden School of Business. Ed, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, glad to have you along because this has been getting a lot more attention, it seems, lately. First, there was a report at the Economic Forum in Davos, and some of the big scientific minds have been talking about this, too. Artificial intelligence taking over. Is it going to happen?
Yes, it's going to happen, Steve, and it's going to happen in numbers so large that people are, one, they're unaware of it, and our society's not ready for it. It is going to be as disruptive for our society as the Industrial Revolution was for our ancestors. We're talking upwards of 50% of U.S. jobs, 80 million jobs being lost. I mean, if you look at jobs lost to China and Mexico in the past decades to manufacturing, that number 7 to 8 million, we're talking upwards of 80 million jobs. And it's going to hit the service industries and the professions hard. And we're not ready, and we need to get ready as a society and begin talking about this.
You mentioned the loss of jobs to Mexico. It seems to be a lot of the attention from politics in Washington these days about losing jobs to other countries. The number of jobs you're talking about, that's catastrophic.
It is huge. Yes, it is. And it's just not going to be in our country. This is going to be global. And so we're talking about really a business. This business is going to be remade. We're talking about challenges to how we live, the meaning of work, the American dream. Humans are basically going to be needed to do those jobs that technology can't do well, and that's basically a limited group of jobs, higher order thinking, creativity, innovation, manual jobs that require real-time problem solving and a lot of manual dexterity, but even that's going to evolve if technology advances. And this is sort of like, we need to have Paul Revere's ride, but it's not the British that are coming. It's the smart technology. And we as a country are not even talking about this. And we need to change our schools. We need to be educating people differently. We need to be preparing people how to live and take care of themselves and work together in a community, because this is big. This is really big.
Yeah, we talk and sometimes joke about the robots doing all kinds of silly things, but the fact of the matter is some of these machines are doing amazing things. There was one yesterday that was making the news. I saw a viral video of this upright robot that was running around and climbing stairs and carrying things around. But there are machines now that fold clothes, that are making beds. They're doing all of the jobs that even the menial jobs that humans do.
Yes, they're machines that can cook the hamburgers and cook the French fries. They're jobs that can lay the bricks, that can paint the houses, that can basically mow the lawns. Yes, and they're, security guards, with robots and drones, security guards are at risk. Just go to driving, driverless trucks and driverless vehicles. I mean, that alone in our country directly and indirectly impacts 7-8 million jobs. Clerks, paralegals, very much. Anybody working in retail and fast food. And what's different about what's happening now, Steve, is you can look at the professions, the accounting profession, law profession, finance, consulting. They're going to be hit really hard. And then other areas, even medicine, architecture, the professions are going to be automated. And so it's going up and down, if you will, the labor curve. And as you can tell, I feel passionately about this, that we as a society, our leaders, business leaders, education leaders, and government leaders, we need to start having conversations about what we're going to do as a country in order to basically create what is the new story of the American dream and how people are going to thrive and flourish.
And we will continue this conversation in a second. Ed, hang on with us. Ed Hess is at the University of Virginia Darden School of Business. We're talking about the AI robot revolution, how it's going to impact our economy and jobs. We'll continue our conversation.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Edward Hess is a professor of business administration at the University of Virginia Darden School of Business. He's on with us this morning talking about AI and robotics. Here's an example. Amazon's new grocery store that's coming out has no cashiers, no baggers, no clerks. Ed, as we talk about this and think about the timing of when this is happening, I think I've answered my next question, and that is, when will we see this happening? It's happening now, isn't it?
Yes, it's happening now, and it's going to accelerate, Steve, as the technology advances over the next 5 years. And really, we're talking about within the next 10 years, the whole concept of work in our society and how businesses, if you're a business owner or work in a big company, I mean, the businesses are going to be staffed by some combination of smart robots, smart machines, and humans. And the humans are going to have to be able to excel at doing the things that technology can't do well. And most of those things are going to involve our emotions, if you will, because we're not going to be able to out-logic or out-think logically the technology. What makes us different than machines, our emotions, our ability to create and innovate and relate. And this, what I call this power of being able to meet emotional needs of others. So, for example, elementary school teachers are going to be in pretty good shape job-wise. Social workers, psychologists, physical therapists, because for the near future, technology is not going to be able to replicate human emotions. And so, yes, it's happening now, and it's, in fact, the technology is ready to happen even in larger numbers than it's happened so far, and it's just a matter of when big companies roll it out over a period of years.
There's, I guess, a number of different possible ways people could end up having jobs or getting paid. The biggest question people always ask when I talk about this is, well, how will we earn a salary? What's the answer to that question? How will we even make money?
Well, that's a good question. And basically, many people, in fact, most people are going to be, if you will, entrepreneurs or freelancers or giggers and doing part-time jobs or even short tours of duties with companies. But those of us that, don't find that, to some extent, we're going to go back to the hunter-gatherer days where we're sort of in we're going to group together with other people in our community and you may raise vegetables and I may raise chickens and you get to the question, well, how do we get enough money to, you know, buy the seeds or buy the corn to feed the chickens? But it's going to be a very community. I think we're going to see a cultural change in our country going back to our ancestors. Right now, we're a very individualistic social Darwinism, big me culture. For us to thrive as a country going forward, we're going to really have to become a community again, collaborate, work together, help each other, just like the hunter-gatherers did in the days of ore when they went out into the unknown and they didn't know where they were going to find food. And they learned, if you will. And people are going to have to become excellent learners, because whatever job they have today, they'll probably be doing a different, completely different job in 5 years, because as technology is going to continue to advance. That's the challenge, as to how we all together figure out how we're going to basically create, if you will, the new United States, the new American dream.
Why do you think leaders are not talking about this? Is it because it will be so devastating, or it's just not on the radar?
The answer is I don't know. So here's some hypothesis. In many cases it is very controversial and nobody yet has an answer. And there are people in technology that are raising the issue. And this is, in the last 2 years, it's changed dramatically. There's a lot of, in fact, senior technology leaders saying, look, this is going to be big. We need to be talking about this. I think it's hard for government leaders, because there's no easy answer, and it's going to take basically getting a lot of people working together and to figure out what we're going to do. And it's going to take big changes, because, as you know, there's some people who are saying that what's going to happen in this country is we're going to have a universal basic income. Everybody is going to get a minimum amount of money. Let's just say the number being tossed around is $10,000 a year. So you can buy your seeds to plant your plants, and I can buy my corn to raise my chickens, and we can basically swap corn and chickens and vegetables. That's all pretty controversial at this point, and it comes down to who's going to pay, all right? Who's going to pay, and it comes down to the big issues. Who's going to really make a lot of money in the smart machine age, and who's not, and how are we basically going to make sure that everybody does well enough? That's big issues vis-a-vis taxation or income redistribution, equity, meaning of life, and those are big issues.
And Ed, real quick, we just have about 30 seconds left, but this is with the divisions in our country right now, both culturally and politically and economically. This is going to be tough.
It's going to be tough, but we have to confront it head on, and we've got people that the best and the brightest can figure out how to make this work in our country. If anybody can make it work, we can make it work, and we have to make it work because we're talking about the future of our country.
Edward Hess, thanks for being with us this morning, a professor of business administration at the University of Virginia Darden School of Business. Ed, good of you to be up with us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Steve. Take care.
You too.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 540. Glad to have you along on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell, our first edition for March. Early intervention is a key to identifying young people at risk of addiction during routine medical visits. The findings of several new reports, including one by the Surgeon General recently, top nursing programs across the country, including here in Chicago, are addressing this call to action to find people at risk of addiction during routine medical visits. Sometimes it's not easy, though, and that's where Cognito comes in. Cyril Adams is the Senior Director of Health Programs at Cognito. Cognito is, Dr. Adams, welcome. Cyril, welcome to the show. Maybe you could describe it for us.
So we are a technology company, and we've developed a very interesting kind of platform that lets us develop simulations, which are almost like a video game, where you can actually learn and practice how to have certain conversations. For example, a conversation about drug use or substance use.
And these are sort of realistic simulations, are they not? And why are they helpful?
So the reason they're helpful is that, yes, they let you actually interact with virtual patients, with what we call emotionally responsive virtual patients. That means that they are characters on your screen who are designed to behave just like real patients would and to respond to what you say just like real patients would. And so that allows a health professional to practice having certain interactions with their patients and having conversations in a kind of risk-free environment, if you will.
It would seem that this would be training that would just be natural in the medical professions of nursing and being doctors. Why hasn't it not been as good as it should be?
Yeah, we've 100 million people in the U.S. reporting use or abuse of substances, you would think it would be part of the normal training of all health professionals. We're still a little ways from that. And the way health professionals typically learn about these things in medical schools or nursing schools or social work school is by doing role play in their classes, in front of the whole class. I don't know if you've ever had to speak in front of a whole classroom in college or something, but you might know it's not the most comfortable thing in the world. So the simulation really is a much more natural and kind of effective environment for them to practice in.
I'm thinking that for our listeners who aren't in the medical profession, the thing closest to this is every once in a while companies will give human resources tests, and there will be a virtual assistant on the screen, and we have to answer questions, and there's an interaction. I'm imagining that's what this is like. Is that a very good comparison?
It's a pretty good comparison. Yeah, basically you are in, like I said, in a video game kind of environment where you might have a coach guiding you through an experience, giving you a lot of feedback on how you're doing in your conversation. You get a chance to interact with a virtual patient that you can really annoy if you don't say the right thing. And none of us really want to be asked questions about our substance use by our doctor or our nurse. And so this is a very realistic kind of experience.
It's also interesting to hear that sometimes nurses and doctors and social workers have trouble asking these questions in the first place. Why is there such an uncomfortableness about this?
So a lot of the time, I think they have other things to talk about with patients, and there are many things that they need to talk about, and they don't have a lot of time with patients. I think it's also so that they don't hurt the relationship with their patients, so that patients won't be mad about being asked about substance use. But I think it's also a matter of skill and comfort. If you don't feel comfortable or if you don't know how to approach certain conversations, you're just not going to go into them. And so instead of asking your patient about their alcohol use over the past year, you'll ask them something like, you don't drink, do you? And the patient will say no, and everybody will walk away.
It's interesting. Sometimes this is called motivational interviewing, the part of it where you can maybe encourage somebody to change their behavior. What would that sort of sound like or be like?
Yeah, motivational interviewing is you know, a collaborative communication technique. So it really aims to foster a spirit of collaboration between the people in the conversation, so that instead of a doctor, for example, berating you for using alcohol or for using tobacco or other drugs, maybe your practitioner can instead try to empathize with you, try to ask you some questions about, what does that do for you? You know, when do you feel that you need to have a drink, and really listen to the person and what they have to say, instead of just saying, you know, alcohol is bad for you, tobacco is bad for you, and you need to quit today. The other thing is that by encouraging people just a little bit, we can at least reduce their consumption of a certain substance. The goal is not to get everybody to quit tomorrow and be straight edge forever. The idea is to get people to use a little less so that their health improves, and so that, you know, everybody is better off.
Cyril, are we seeing any statistics about how this might be helping in terms of catching people, this early intervention?
So we're seeing a strong implementation of this in healthcare. The federal government and many other organizations have really pushed to get doctors to ask more patients about their substance use. And yes, we are seeing a strong uptick in the number of those conversations that are happening, the number of patients who are identified. And I think, you know, there is a strong movement, especially with the Surgeon General's report recently. There is a strong urge to do something about substance use in this country, especially around prescription medication and heroin, which is really coming back very fast in this country.
Cyril Adam, the Senior Director of Health Programs at Cognito. Cyril, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
You can find more about this, visit Cognito.com. That's Cognito with a K, Cognito.com. Helping health professionals using simulations to better get into the minds and hearts of patients.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are positive as we head toward the opening bell a little bit later on this morning, up about 78 points right now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are a little bit higher as well. Crude oil trading up as well this morning. European and Asian stock markets are generally mixed. On the opening bell now, we want to sort of update a story that we had earlier this week. We talked to Dr. Robert Marks, who is the author of a new book called Deadly Prescription. And honestly, we did a bad job of not telling you that this was a fiction book that draws from real life experiences. We did in the interview talk to Dr. Marks about his real life battles with big pharma, dangerous prescriptions, but we wanted to sort of clarify some of this and maybe provide another part of the story. Dr. Kevin Most is the Vice President of Medical Affairs at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. He's with us this morning here on the Opening Bell. Dr. Most, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. We did sort of a lousy job with this, and we wanted to make good on it because Dr. Marks earlier this week talked a little bit about one drug, Gardasil, and referred to it as being dangerous. Tell us a little bit about Gardasil. Is it a dangerous drug?
No, not at all. And you know, Steve, it's kind of interesting. Everybody wants to bash pharmaceutical companies right now, and we really have to be careful because they've done a lot of good things. You know, when we talk about Gardasil and he bashes it, and I say, really? Would you like to know that that drug could essentially eliminate uterine cancer?
Yeah,
wow.
It's a big
deal,
right?
Why wouldn't we do that? Why wouldn't we do something? Why wouldn't we use a vaccine that could protect women in their future from having a disease that can kill them. And we've had that over and over across this country and across the world, to be honest with you. And people love to bash Big Pharma, but Gardasil is a great medication, and it's a great vaccine that's going to allow us to protect people in the future. The anti-vaccine people, you know, look at what we've done with polio. Look at what we've done with things as simple as measles, mumps, rubella, influenza, diseases that can kill people and really impact their life. And we've eliminated that by using the body's own protection, the body's own immune system.
He also talked a little bit about some other drugs, Vioxx, Fosamax. Talked about some of these drugs that get the black box, the black label in their approval. Talked about maybe having a 5-year probationary period for drugs instead of just outright approval. Are there points, valid points here, or is this barking up the wrong tree?
Well, it's probably, it's a little bit of both. I'll say a lot of it is barking up the wrong tree. People think that, boy, a drug company makes a drug and then the next week it's out. It goes through extensive trials, and it goes through animal trials, human trials, dosing trials, side effect trials. So this is a long period of time before the FDA says it is safe. Assuredly, there are some drugs that say, wait a second, it's safe, but you need to know this, and this is very important, and that's that black box warning. That's for physicians to say, okay, I need to weigh the risks and benefits of whether I need to use this medication or whether there's a better alternative. Often there's not a better alternative to either increase the quality of life or quantity of life of the individual, and they're going to take that. But they're going to talk with the patient and say, these are the things that we're concerned about. This is what we need to worry about and look for.
Is the reputation of Big Pharma, as he refers to it, others refer to it, is it a bad reputation? Is it an improving reputation?
Well, that's another question. It really depends. Some people say it's a bad reputation because they hear the story of the EpiPen and the cost of EpiPens. And, you know, we're hearing all these one-offs. But let me tell you, you know, we used to have to dose penicillin 4 or 5 times a day to treat pneumonia. We don't do that anymore. We have a pill that you take once a day. Compliance rates go up, cure rates go up. High blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, you take whatever disease you want. And I can tell you that Big Pharma or pharma companies and these brilliant scientists have found medications that's going to make your quality of life better and your quantity of life better with lower side effects than they did 15, 20 years ago. We may not like it. We may like to bash it. But I'll tell you, those same people that are bashing it are going home at night and taking their high blood pressure medicine so they don't end up with a heart disease or a stroke. So we have to balance those two because they do a lot of good things. We may be upset with how much money they make, but we have to balance it with the impact they're making on our lives.
Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, the VP of Medical Affairs, a regular on the Steve Cochran Show. We appreciate you coming on this morning, Dr. Most, and helping clear the air a little.
You got it, Steve. Call anytime.
All right. Thank you. Now the WGN Associated Bank market outlook for this Tuesday, or actually Wednesday now. It's Wednesday, March 1st. Mark that on your calendars, 2017. Here are some of the things that could drive the markets today. Among economic reports due out, the Commerce Department analysis of personal income and spending for January is released. The Institute for Supply Management, putting out its manufacturing index and commerce, issues a report on construction spending in January. The Federal Reserve also releases its Beige Book economic report, and U.S. automakers are set to announce vehicle sales figures for February. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, March 1st, 2017.